Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
The LA District Attorney reminded the public in a press briefing not to believe rumours or speculation they see on social media about the death of actor and director Rob Reiner and his wife Michelle, who it appears were scheduled to have dinner with Michelle and Barack Obama on the day of their deaths. Rob Reiner and Michelle's son Nick has been charged with their murder. He faces life in prison without parole or perhaps even the death penalty. Professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institution at UCD, Scott Lucas, joins us now. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
Now, it's the political end of this that we want to talk about, the tragedy of the Reiners and what happened within their family because of their son's obvious problems is one thing, but I suppose it's President Trump's comments which have been drawing most attention in all of this.
I mean, Pat, I'm going to speak from a personal point of view briefly, which is, you know, I have never in my life, in any respect, seen any person, not necessarily an official, not necessarily a person with a high position, I've never seen anybody issue such a vile and disgusting statement as Trump did after the death of Rob Reiner and his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner. Rob Reiner and Michelle Singer Reiner were very political. They were very forthcoming in their views. They were active in terms of helping youth, in terms of helping young adults. They were involved on economic, social issues. They were very, very well liked in and beyond Hollywood. But Trump chose to use this to attack the Reiners, because Rob Reiner, for example, had expressed doubts about Donald Trump's campaign working with Russia in 2016, for which there is substantial evidence. We don't need to go into that. He said insults about Rob Reiner I will not repeat here, because even if Rob Reiner was still alive, they're completely unacceptable. To do this just after hours, they had been murdered. My grandmother always told me, Pat, you don't speak ugly of people, and Trump was as ugly as they come.
We have an expression, don't speak ill of the dead. It's just a convention generally in Ireland. Now, the Republicans, some have spoken out, including Massey has spoken out, and, you know, waiting for other major Republicans to say something critical of Trump's comments. Mike Johnson has dodged the issue when pressed. So what is it with Republicans that even the elements of common decency that should prevail when someone has been killed in this way, that they can't grasp?
You're quite right to point out that although, you know, we have had a handful of Republicans who've denounced this, such as Marjorie Taylor Greene and Tom Massey, they have been at odds with Trump on other issues for some time. The rest of the Republican Party, including the leadership, some of them support Trump. Some of them are beholden to Trump in terms of their political careers. And some of them just don't want to cross Trump and incur his ire. You have a party which is just badly, badly damaged because Trump has tried to turn it into a cult of personality, and it takes quite a lot to defy the person at the top of that cult.
Now, that will, I suppose, fester on, and his insults will continue to his various targets. I mean, when you remember his mimicking someone with a disability, when he talks about, use that word that is common in America, retard, all that sort of stuff, it's so unacceptable and so unpresidential, but no doubt he will continue with all of that. Meantime, the Epstein release is scheduled for Friday. Now, what do you expect there? Or are we going to have an invasion of Venezuela to distract?
Well, let's take both of these. First of all, I'm not sure the files will be released on Friday anyway. Because Trump's political servant, Pam Bondi, the attorney general, I think will try to find any excuse to prevent them from coming out because Trump is in those files, as his chief of staff, Susie Wiles, has revealed in this Vanity Fair interview. And I think the Justice Department may simply say they have to carry out further redactions. They may say they haven't gone through all the files. In other words, they may play for time as we go into the Christmas period. They may say that there are open investigations against Trump's political enemies, Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, who knows who else they may name, and say that that's a reason not to release the files. In terms of Venezuela, certainly it is a concern that with the Friday deadline coming up, that although the Trump administration is trying to get rid of Nicolas Maduro, the head of the regime in Venezuela anyway, that it would be convenient to launch military action on Friday. I don't think we're talking about a full-scale military invasion. I think we're talking about strikes on Venezuelan targets on land that could occur.
So the distractions will come thick and fast if the Epstein files are about to be released. If he gets assurances from Pam Bondi that very little will come out on Friday, then perhaps there will be, if you like, a pause in all of this until after Christmas. But in the meantime, he's been defending Susie Wiles, his chief of staff, the first female ever to occupy that role. She gave an interview to Vanity Fair, and it's been it's quite extraordinary in its outspokenness. And we can go through some of it. She described Trump as having the attributes of an alcoholic. Now, he doesn't drink, so it's not that. He just behaves. Susie says, I have a familiarity with the way alcoholics are and addicts are, and he has those attributes. He believes he can do anything.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just one interview, Pat. She spoke to Chris Whipple of Vanity Fair 11 times. And this was part of a Vanity Fair package on the administration. Speaking to other officials, doing photographs of them. This was not a hit job with Vanity Fair putting words in Susie Wiles' mouth. The specifics on Trump is Susie Wiles is the daughter of a very famous sports broadcaster named Pat Summerall, who I watched when I was a boy. He was an alcoholic. She has experienced his behavior and spoken about it. She's talking about Trump having the personality of being obsessive, of being aggressive, of being assured that he is always right, and of feeling that he is invulnerable. And as we just mentioned with his reaction to Rob Reiner, that type of personality believes it is beyond accountability. So that is a very damning thing that Susie Wiles said, even if she defended Trump on certain specific policies.
I mean, she says there may be an element of retribution in Trump's efforts to pursue criminal cases against political adversaries or perceived foes, I suppose, like James Comey and Letitia James. But she says he doesn't wake up thinking about retribution, but when there's an opportunity, he will go for it.
Well, I think Susie may have been, even in her full and frank statements, pulled back just a bit because Trump thinks about retribution all the time. What I think is telling, if you go deep into the interview, is that Susie Wiles said, look, that the retribution, okay, Trump's angry. He thought the election had stolen from him. He's back in office. Okay, he's going to exact his pound of flesh. But she's saying it really should have stopped after a few months. But of course, it's continuing. I mean, he is persecuting people like Letitia James, the New York Attorney General, or James Comey, the former FBI director.
Now, the other personalities that she talks about include Vice President J.D. Vance, who she says has been a conspiracy theorist for a decade, and that his change of heart, where he, of course, demonized Trump in his early days and then changed his mind, that this is purely political. It's about ambition. It's not about principle at all.
Absolutely. I mean, look, Susie Wiles, who's a very canny political operator, she doesn't come out and out and say, these are horrible people. How could I ever work for them? She just lays explosives in this interview. And so Vance's political ambition, which means he's willing to change position, but then this damning statement that he believes in conspiracy theories. She doesn't say which one, but it leaves the impression that you've got a combination of a person who will go down some dangerous road, both because he thinks he can get advantage from it and also because he believes things that aren't necessarily true.
Now, she focuses on Elon Musk as well. She says he's an avowed ketamine user. He sleeps in a sleeping bag in the executive office building. This is when he was in charge of Doge. He's an odd duck. Odd, I think, all geniuses are. You know, it is not helpful, but he is his own person. So an odd, eccentric, ketamine-using duck.
Yeah, and the big thing here is, okay, odd duck is one thing, but someone who is abusing ketamine, and she says that some of his forthright actions in terms of ripping the government apart may have been the effect of microdosing, even though she doesn't know for sure. That's something different. And again, it raises the question. Susie Wiles is posing as being the effective chief of staff that meant that Trump 2.0 was more effective than Trump 1.0. Yeah, what are you doing, Susie Wiles, when you've got the dysfunctional Elon Musk cutting through your administration to the point where he not only damaged the government, but in the end, he damaged his own relationship with Trump?
Now, it's very interesting, her analysis of what he did. She's talking about the abolition of USAID, saying she was initially aghast at the idea. She said, I think that anybody that pays attention to government has ever paid attention to USAID believed, as I did, that they do very good work. Elon's attitude is that you have to get it done fast. If you're an incrementalist, you won't get a rocket to the moon. As she said, with that attitude, you're going to break some china. But no rational person could think the USAID process was a good one. Nobody.
Yeah, but now Susie's covering for other people because the decision to get rid of USAID was not Elon Musk's decision. That was put forth in Project 2025, which was the blueprint for the Trump administration. USAID was to be the pilot case of getting rid of agencies that are not perceived as being loyal to Trump. So in this case, Musk, in effect, becomes a very well-earned scapegoat. He deserves blame for this, but there are others who were behind this. Even if Musk wasn't there, AID was going to be destroyed.
Now, what do you make of the contention by the White House, by Caroline Leavitt, who praised the work that Susie Wiles does as being so effective, saying that this was a hit on Susie Wiles, that it was they did a job on her. And yet when the New York Times approached Vanity Fair to say, you know, with that suggestion from the White House, they said, do you want to listen to the tapes and offer the tapes to the New York Times? And lo and behold, it was all there.
Vanity Fair always, reporters always record their interviews precisely for this reason. And Chris Whipple was a very experienced reporter who's written a couple of best-selling books, including one which tore apart the Biden administration. So he plays even-handed here. And the fact of the matter, the reason why you can tell that the Trump administration is trying to cover its back, and they know Wiles said this, is because they haven't actually challenged any of the specific quotes. They haven't actually said, oh, no, this isn't right, this isn't right. They haven't challenged any of the specific facts. They've said that Whipple did not include context. And as he pointed out in an interview last night, when politicians say, oh, you didn't include context over what was said to you, then you know you got them.
So what happens now? I mean, they're going to defend her because they have to. But is she toast?
We will see, because I'm going to leave you with two points. One is, you always close ranks immediately after a damaging interview like this. You don't immediately go after the person that put the interview on record, because then you're acknowledging, yep, that was what was said about us. But secondly, Pat, here's the question to you and others you may talk to. Why did Susie Wiles say this? She's an experienced political operator. It's not like she's naive. Why would she do 11 interviews with Chris Whipple that lay these explosives to undermine the Trump administration, including Trump himself? And why is the interview coming out now? Is it coming out now because the news cycle will be taken over by the Epstein files later this week? Is there another reason? Give it a week and see if the Trump people are still saying nice things about Susie Wiles.
Okay, it's interesting if you're thinking that she is really a cipher for somebody else, and that this, and she would have known the timing of this piece coming out in Vanity Fair. She wouldn't have been given final editorial view of it or anything like that. But is she operating for somebody? Is she Marco Rubio's woman, for example? Because she clearly is not J.D. Vance's woman in terms of succession. So is she operating with the hope that somebody else will get the job?
I don't know, Pat. I don't know. Look, Susie Wiles is very, very good at her job, but she's also someone who does her job for the moment. She worked for Ron DeSantis, helped get him elected governor of Florida, but then DeSantis turns against her. She winds up getting involved with Trump, even though Trump hates DeSantis, because Trump recognizes that she has certain qualities in her. But Susie Wiles could well change political horses. And I think you raise an interesting prospect here. That is, who else comes out well and who doesn't come out well out of the interview? Vance doesn't come out well. Marco Rubio comes out relatively unscathed. So even as Rubio said, oh, I'll support J.D. Vance if he runs for president in 2028, is there a Rubio camp that is moving to forestall both Trump and Vance going forward?
On that note, Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD. Thank you very much, Scott, for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.